Hey, how you doing? Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available for Monday, the 26th of October 2020, with me, Daniel Ruiz Tyson, episode 282, take 3. Hope you're all healthy, keeping on doing what you need to be doing to keep yourself going. 45 hours here, about an hour on from having a microwaved pasty. Not much meat to begin with, even less, given that I forgot it was in the microwave. I normally only microwave it if I've made it already in the oven. This is a lot of extraneous detail. I tend to make them in batches, don't like to spend a lot of time in the kitchen, so then I just need to heat them up over the next few days in the microwave. Try not to heat things up more than 90 seconds. I forgot this was in there. 2 minutes it was in there for. And as I say, not much meat to begin with, and more of a paste by the time I took it out. Just had a shower too as well, and absolutely freezing in that bathroom despite putting on the heating for an hour prior to going in there. Literally froze my ass off. I don't know why it is that the bathrooms of my life have always had to be so cold. Back at Mayflower, I've told you this before, every time I got out of that bath in the winter, there was no heating in that building, full stop, and the window was busted. And every time I got out of that bath in winter, I would just keep telling myself, I'd keep repeating this mantra, it's hot, it's hot, it's hot. To this day, I still do that. It's a good job I do because the bathroom here is freezing. The heater, I don't even think bleeding it this winter is going to do much. And also, the flat next door, I don't have any confidence in the frosted bathroom windows. So I'll switch a hallway light on. I'll leave the bathroom door ajar and switch the bathroom light off if I'm going to have a shower in the evening. So all the heat, all that warmth that I might have got into that bathroom by having the heating on prior to having a shower is just leaking out of that bathroom. But I'm just very paranoid about the neighbor being able to see through the bathroom window. At least the silhouettes, you know, the silhouettes is enough. If you can see the silhouettes behind a bathroom frosted window, you know what they're doing. You know, you can gauge the arm movements. You get an idea of what parts are being washed, when, at what stage. You might be reaching below the waistline, when you might be doing your back. I just find that very uncomfortable. I don't enjoy showering in such a way. Anyway, that's the microwaved pasty and the shower dealt with. Had a message on LinkedIn from an agent representing a high profile guy that I was approaching for the new football show. And, you know, I believe in aiming high before settling for whoever I'm going to settle for. And the email came back short, succinct. Well, that's the same thing. So-and-so is not available for the foreseeable. I think foreseeable means don't contact us again. So that was a little frustrating. There are two or three guys now that I've tried to get for the show. One, I'm just having trouble getting. Two have said no. Well, one has said no via their agent. And the other, I don't know what's going on with the publisher. I've just not had the luck I needed with the contact there. It's been going on for 2 or 3 weeks. Every other publisher has managed to get books out to me on time. The problem has been at my end in that I just don't have the time to do the reading that I need to do for this show. That's something I really need to address. But this particular contact at this particular company, sending her chasers and just not really getting anywhere. So I'm not sure what I need to do there. Some sad news that I saw this morning, Kevin McCarra, the old Guardian football journalist, and someone that I knew, albeit only via email, but we'd certainly exchanged quite a few messages in the mid-noughties when I was actually doing fairly well in football before I, you know, finally stepped away from it, before going back to it about 10 years later. I knew that something was going on with him because I felt that his career at The Guardian had ended very early and very suddenly. And also, he'd gone missing twice, and these were high-profile incidents. He was a well-known football journalist. That football community, the online journalists, they were all retweeting this stuff and posting links to the family's messages, trying to establish where Kevin McCarroll was. I think the last time it was either the 2018 World Cup or the 2016 World Cup. When it happened the first time, I mean, I retweeted and posted my own tweets during these incidents because I did remember him fondly, because I just thought it wasn't that common to find someone at the top of the tree who was actually as humble and as generous with his time as he was. So the first time I thought, wow, what's going on here? You know, is this why he disappeared from the Guardian so suddenly? You know, what's the story here? And it was never revealed what was happening with him. Even when he went missing the second time, they never mentioned that he'd already gone missing before, as far as I can recall, which I thought was a bit strange. But when I heard that, I definitely thought something is not right here, because this is twice now. And, you know, all sorts of things went around my head. You know, you start thinking, is this someone that's very depressed? Is this someone maybe that's in danger of hurting themselves? Eventually, on both occasions, he was found. Today, I've read the obituaries. He had Alzheimer's disease. He was a very young-looking 62. And I guess that's why his career really just came to an end so suddenly. I think he wrote one or two high-profile football books after he left The Guardian. There are a number of things that I remember about Kevin. Maybe four or five things that stand out. One, he was a brilliant writer. And for a period in the mid-noughties, I would say that he was in the top three or four football writers in the country, which is no mean thing. Secondly, I remember his appearances on the early years of Guardian Football Weekly. And I think those early years of Guardian Football Weekly were essentially listening to a football podcast that I don't think has been matched a decade on. Those were its best years. So it was good to hear him as well. He really knew his stuff. And then I remember that towards the end of his time at The Guardian, you know, when reading below the line comments became a thing, when, you know, it became part of an article, a journalist puts their work out there and people are allowed to pass comment. And the thing is, the thing that tells you how full the world is of keyboard warriors is that even a paper like The Guardian, even the broadsheets, have this problem with below the line comments where you just get so much vitriol and poison. And Kevin McCarroll, I remember, was, I think, the first person that I knew who would get a lot of online abuse for their work. That obviously hasn't been mentioned in the obituaries. It's not the time, not the place to be mentioning those things. But that was my first experience of seeing that level of nastiness directed at an individual. I don't know whether it was because I think he was a Celtic fan and perhaps some of that was coming from fans of other Scottish clubs. I don't know, but it was just really nasty stuff. It didn't tally with the quality of his work as far as I saw it, because I do think he was very gifted. He was a brilliant football writer. He was just not at the top for very long. That was the curious thing. And I guess, you know, I guess it all makes sense now. But you wish that everyone who got to the top of their profession would be as nice with this guy, would be as generous as this guy. Even with a football show, there were, you know, a number of people that I've approached who a decade or so ago were at the level that I was at, if that, when I was a football writer. And now you try to get them on board for something, and as far as they're concerned, you know, they've left you behind. They're too big for that. There was none of that with Kevin McCarroll. He was a genuinely nice guy who genuinely cared about you making progress with your writing career. So sad to see that. Another passing this weekend as well. I won't mention the name. I'm pretty sure you'll guess who it is when I give you the details around that name. And that was someone who was at the top of their tree for a very long time in their case. And then about 30 years ago, their career came crashing down with I think it was the News of the World expose, you know, sex workers, drugs. And it was a shock for the time because of who this person was. What the obituaries didn't say there was that, Years later, the same person got busted again in another expose. And I know this, one, because I remember that happening, and two, because I knew his dealer. And this guy was an old friend. And I've always had enough about me to know that even if I'm friends with someone, when they might not be right for me, I knew that when I was a Saturday boy at Woolies, and I had very close, intense friendships with a lot of people there. When you're young, you make friends easily. And though I'm a reserved character, though I'm an introvert, I did go through a spell when I first discovered alcohol at just before I was 16, where when the drink took me, and I wasn't a big drinker, so I was never going to have a problem in that regard, but my personality was just transformed, and I made so many friends, and a lot of them were from the Woolworths crowd. I was hanging around in some of the rougher areas of Clapham Junction, even when I wasn't working at the store. I think I spent about 2 weeks almost on the Winstanley estate, which was notorious. It may still be notorious, but certainly in the late 80s, it was a really rough place, and there were incidents at night in the particular flat that I stayed in, which, would unnerve me if I was in that situation now. And as a, whatever age I was then, I don't know. I don't. I just remember those incidents and not being that unnerved by them. I guess trusting that the people I was around at the time would protect me from anything if things got worse than they were. And then I got to 18, 19, and I realized that I couldn't be around these people. They were some of the best people I've ever met to this day. I've missed them to this day. I've missed what I had in that store of all places. I didn't go to university. My university was Woolworths Clapham Junction. I had a great time there. And there's a pattern in my life of leaving before I feel things come to their natural end. So I end up missing things a lot. I did that with a picture library job, probably the best job I had, a job that would have made my career with a man a lot more pleasant had I stayed there. It would have helped me avoid the kind of jobs, the day jobs that I had to take in subsequent years. It would have kept me out of the public sector for a start. Woolworths was simply, well, it was a crap job. Because I think retail is a tough job, but some of the people there were a bit dodgy, and I had enough about me to be concerned that they might take me down with them, whatever road they were going down. And the guy who provided this well-known person that passed away this weekend with their recreational drugs that got them exposed a second time, he had form for that. There was another high-profile person years later who again had their drugs supplied by this guy. And he was also the guy who put together one of the UK's best-known dance bands, a massive, massive band, not afraid of living it up. But this guy, my old friend, was so notorious, so hedonistic that they actually got rid of him. That's how bad he was. The first time I ever met him, he came into our radio class late. I know that I've told this story on some episode a long time ago. He came into class late. I remember he was in a pair of dungarees. It would have been about October 95. The OJ case would reach a conclusion very quickly, within days, I think, of when this course started. There was also the Diana Martin Bashir interview, I think, on that very first day of the course, I think. It was a great course for me. I really enjoyed it. And this guy turned up. I think he was wearing a purple t-shirt, dungarees. The thing that I remember most, well, he was locked out of his flat in Brixton, or a friend's flat in Brixton. And he was wearing flip-flops. And you know where I stand on flip-flops. And I thought, well, that's a strange thing. And, that's what a late entrance. We hit it off right away on that first day. And that was what happened with me and the space daddy as well, 6, 7 years earlier at the same college. I think that that can happen with extroverts and introverts. You get something from them that you don't have, and they get something from you that you don't have. And he was a huge radio fan, which is why he had joined that course. Whereas I wanted to make radio shows, he wanted to be a front man. And this is the days just before the internet was coming through. I think I had my first visit to an internet cafe with Lopez, I think October, November 95 in Victoria, because I bought Tears for Fears' role in the Kings of Spain album that year, which I think was with Sony. And inside, in the whatever you call it, the old CD covers, the booklets, there was something about you can find out more information on the band by visiting their website. And that was news to me. I'd already had my first semi internet experience. I hope no one pauses that and just hears my first semi. I'd already had my first internet experience with Lopez when I went to visit him in Oxford. We were in some common room, and that's where he first explained to me that the computers in there were communicating with each other. I couldn't get my head around it. Anyway, this guy, I'm not going to mention his name either, before the internet, he was always getting Howard Stern tapes sent to him from the States. He was a massive Howard Stern fan, and very quickly it became clear that he and I, the plan was we were going to work together. And I always saw myself as a producer. I never felt that I had the confidence to be a front man, to be presented as I am, as I have been for the last 10, 12 years. For me, I would have been happy with being a producer because I know I'm a creative guy. I can pull things together. I like identifying talent and bringing it all together. And for 5 or 6 years, we were doing stuff. We had a producer. At the time, I didn't know how to produce. So I was really more of a whatever, creative overseer. I was doing my own stuff, prank calls that would go alongside this guy's anchoring of our show. And we had a producer that I was really good friends with who was also on the course, but he didn't think much of this guy who was fronting the show. We had another girl that was with us who had a terrific voice. And I just remembered him yesterday because he was indirectly responsible for this guy getting busted a second time and wrecking his career all over again after a relatively calm 8 or 9 year period. And about 7 or 8 years later, he'd done it again with a radio DJ. And the last time I saw him, I'd gone up to see him because I just thought I was at a curious point in my life. And the reason it didn't happen was because the whole thing with my dad happened that summer. So it just completely threw me. But I was feeling prior to that very, very positive, very upbeat, very creative. I'd not been able to write in the way that I could write, but I was still able to create other stuff. So I went to visit him. He was living outside of London. I went to this place, first time and last time that I've ever been there. He'd actually made his million by then. His cousin, who was a presenter at BBC London or whatever it was called in the early noughties, used to have a Friday night show. He put us in touch. I went there. I went to see him. He'd made his million in double glazing. He had the gift of the gab, and that meant that he was only in radio for, I suppose, for the acclaim, for the fun of it. And also, and this touched me despite my grave reservations about him, because he wanted to help me, because he said that he knew that I was never going to make the kind of money that he was making, and that he liked me, and that he wanted to help me. And I was touched by that. I've never forgotten that. A couple of years ago, he actually tracked me down on Twitter, and he was 6 years older than me. I would have responded. I might have responded to one tweet, but I could see him very early on again trying to pigeonhole me, trying to nail me down as the guy I was back in the 90s, which, I may well still be that guy now. Of course, you're not going to change that much. And I wouldn't expect that he would have changed that much. And I just thought, it was hard enough to break away from him twice, I think it was. He was a dodgy guy. He was a nice guy, but when he was on the drink, and also, foolishly, I got in this car with him. He had, I think, I can't remember, he had a music center in his car, which was effectively a video player. The only time I'd seen it, well, the first time I'd certainly seen something like that. He was drink driving. We got in his open top, whatever it was, a really, really flash car. And I was really unnerved at the speed he was driving at. And so this is going to be very difficult for me to be with this guy. The amount of times I went out with him on a Friday or Saturday night, and I was younger by, as I say, 6 years, and he'd always get hammered. I'd always end up having to get him home, and then he'd start calling me at night on the house phone. I live with my mum. It wasn't fair on her. And it was always a worry. I think he's the kind of guy who, he was already ahead in this before we'd even got into that world. And you have to remember that that was a big thing in the mid-90s. It was the whole Britpop thing, lad culture, and, you know, the whole ladette thing. And I was just too quiet for that. Had he been less naughty, less hyper, I think we would have done good work, because he didn't care. He was fearless. That was the problem with him. It didn't matter how big a guy was, how hard a guy was. It didn't matter to him. He had one of those broken noses that if he was a boxer, he'd be told not to fix, because you get certain boxers whose noses have been broken in such a way that they can't be broken again. They're stronger than the average nose. There's the brilliant lightweight champ, Teofimo Lopez. Have a look at his nose. Carl Froch had a brilliant nose. You cannot break those noses no matter how hard you punch. And he had one of those noses, and he got it by being punched, because he was a real gobby guy. Anyway, this is meant to be a shorter show, and obviously it's not going to be that now. I can see that I was short-tempered again today. Definitely the pills, the disruption, the builders, having scaffolders suddenly appear at my top floor windows like that kid hovering outside the window in Salem's lot. It is really unsettling. I'm having breakfast this morning, and actually I may as well give you my breakfast update now since I was last with you. Saturday was toast. Sunday was crackers. No, I think Saturday was crackers as well. Yesterday was crackers, and today was crackers. No, I wouldn't have had crackers 3 days in a row. I normally write these down. Today was definitely crackers. No, today was toast. That meant whatever. Crackers twice and toast. I think we'll leave it there. Let me just get back on with the whole thing about having breakfast. I was having breakfast this morning. What did I say it was? I think it was crackers this morning. Anyway, it was 12 hours ago, 13 hours ago now. And thankfully, the condensation on these super awful windows here in the flat offered me some privacy. And I'm going to need that condensation while these builders are here. Someone rang the bell around lunchtime. And I apologize if I'm slurring today. I don't know what it is. I feel really, really tired. And I am slurring a lot. And I know that because I'm having to stop the show a lot and do retakes. So someone rang the bell. And I had a feeling it might be the workman overseeing all the building work, the guy who wants the elbow greeting. And no one is coming into this flat without 24 hours notice. These guys, they try to make their own rules, but, you know, it's not going to fly with me. I need that notice. I can then prepare the flat. I can bring out the dust sheets, cover everything, and prepare myself for the nonsense that their visit will entail as they again examine the ceiling and go up into the loft, all the usual stuff. I was definitely ratty by midday, had an argument with a guy that called me earlier than he was meant to. And this was a big deal because I told him today, because he said, you know, I have to call you today. It has to be at such and such a time then, I told him, because of the work going on below. I explained all that, which is why I'm recording well into the evening. I'm not even watching the Spurs game tonight, the Spurs Burnley game. So the noise below me is just so loud, as noise tends to be, and I can't focus. I said to this guy, if you're going to speak to me, we're going to have to speak at lunchtime. So he's then trying to do one of those remote viewing things on the laptop, or trying to get me to log into some system anyway. And he was treating me as if I didn't know the internet, when, you know, I suspect that I was using it before he was born, or, you know, before he started school at the very least. And he was telling me, okay, if you punch this name into Google, and I said to him right away, I don't use Google. So then I backed myself into a corner, because the DuckDuckGo that I favor wasn't finding this particular business. And he kept annoying me by saying, well, if you were using Google, I said, I don't use Google. It was a back and forth. And looking back, and I assessed this very quickly afterwards as I calmed down, that was not the time to be making the anti-Google point, which I think is a good point. But, you know, you got to choose your battles. You got to choose your times when you make those points. And I should have just humored the guy. He got better after that. I think he could understand that. Well, he could understand why I was rattled. You know, all this work going on at such a time. And, you know, each day being a battle to get things done. The clocks I changed on Saturday late morning, and I think my aunt may have done it as well. So we were both households. Our Saturdays were longer. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, the clocks went back. She didn't want to do it in the middle of the night because she said she'd forget. And I said, "Well, no, you can do it in the morning." She said, "No, I'll forget." So she basically did what I've been doing, and I changed my clocks on Saturday around midday. Sunday, I was in three time zones. One of the clocks, the clock in the back room, the unusable study, that battery needed to be replaced. Today, only on my evening run did I realize that the one timepiece I'd forgotten to change was the wristwatch. I hadn't put that back. By the way, maybe useless bit of information from the last week. I listened to a brilliant show on the BBC World Service on the history of clocks. And I think the first wristwatch was in 1592. I think I've got that right. It was around that period. I hadn't thought that they were in existence that early. And wristwatches only became the thing, I think it was by about the First World War, they were being used. But apparently, they were very, very difficult to design for men because, obviously, with wristwatches, they're different to pocket watches because, you're going to bang your wrist about. It had to be waterproof. So, women's wristwatches apparently were a lot easier to create than men's wristwatches. That was a good show. Yesterday, I kept an eye on what time it was getting dark in the evening, so I could gauge what kind of time I needed to be out for today's run. I am slurring. I'm not sure what it is. Very, very tired. So I got out late today. Didn't get out for the run until 1600 hours. I'd been aiming to do 1530 hours, but I got one of my scripts in today, met a deadline, which was tonight. The other script, the script where I made the shortlist. Maybe I'll come to that later. So, because I hadn't left the flat until 1600 hours today, I knew that again I would have to finish my run on the road. It was a good run, my best run since May. Really pleased with it. Over 12K in 70 minutes. It's amazing what you can do when you have to. I was just very comfortable from start to finish, limited my repetitions, and I think that helped. The reason I do a lot of the repetitions habitually is partly because I'm trying to pad out the run because I doubt whether I've got four laps in me. And I did four laps of that big park today. And I did that by taking out the repetitions. That was key to it. And it's just amazing what you can do when you have to because, it's not a great time. But I actually think that has helped me with the running. The last 3 weeks, it's been a real return to the running form of the early summer. And it reminds me of Dr. David Banner in the pilot episode of The Hulk. I think in the comic he was Bruce Banner. That's the way Marvel used to name their characters: Peter Parker, Bruce Banner. I'm trying to think of other examples, which I ought to have thought about before saying that. I think Captain America was Steve Rogers, so I've completely undermined what I've just said. But I know that in Marvel Comics, it was Bruce Banner. In the TV series of the late 70s, it was Dr. David Banner. And in the pilot episode, his wife is trapped in a burning car and he's desperate to get her out. And he manages, I don't know what he manages to do, he manages to do something with his car. It's an incredible display of strength. And of course, it triggers the Hulk. And today, my run today was like that, but with a better outcome because unfortunately for Dr. David Banner, he was never able to save his wife from that car. And it was a very dramatic scene, which was always, I think, played in the trailers prior to that, prior to the following week's episode. Mix the run up, clockwise action interspersed with a bit of counterclockwise action. Couldn't tell you which was which, though. And I mean that genuinely. Gordon Manners on Twitter, don't know if he listens to the show, but he made some interesting observations. He actually, first of all, because he said that a picture he saw of my feet in the parks, he says, "It looks strangely as if you have two right feet in that photo. Do you find you run in circles a lot?" I looked at the picture and there was definitely something in what he was saying. I'd responded, I can't remember with what, but he came back to me and he tweeted, "Luckily for you, most track races are run anti-clockwise," which is something I had heard as well. So it may be an inbuilt advantage. See you in Oslo. And his final tweet was really interesting. It was on why track races tend to be run anti-clockwise. And he said it might be because most people are right-handed, stroke-footed, and therefore that's the natural way to turn, or anti-clockwise because you're literally running against the clock. Don't know if park runs are organised anti-clockwise. I'm left-footed. I know that I always lead with my left foot when I run, but I honestly don't have a clue. I just don't have that common sense. I couldn't tell you whether I'm running clockwise or anti-clockwise. And I've forgotten what I was going to say next. This memory, incredible. What was I going to say next? It's gone. It's gone. Finished the run in the dark on the road for the last stretch of the run, the last leg, as I have been for the last few weeks. As I was running home, there were a bunch of runners who were running on that narrow pavement on the perimeter of the park, because obviously those park gates have been closed. And one guy, he was running towards me, and I stepped out onto the road just as he was about to step out onto the road. And I remember my right hand shooting out as if to say, leave this to me, son. I've got it. I'll go on the road. Felt like I was now more than a novice. It might have been the moment that I finally arrived as a runner. A bit of a concern for me is now that I'm having to finish on the road because I'm not getting out to the park on time, and you know the clocks have gone back, so the nights are drawing in far earlier. There's going to be a lot more of this, and I don't think I have any reflectors. There's nothing on the armband, which, by the way, today managed to stay on. It did take probably about 200 meters to actually fix to the arm this time, but it did actually stay on for once. Not sure if I've got any reflectors on the armband, and if I have, I tend to wear the phone on the inside of the arm, so I'm assuming that would be where the reflectors are. And I'm not making use of them, and I've certainly not got any reflectors on the trainers. It was actually a comfortable run, I think, because I just kept doing the laps rather than repeating circuits. What I would say is that the last two runs, my feet have been very cold, and I think I know why. I think I know why I didn't experience this last year. One, I wasn't running these distances. I was barely touching 3K around Christmas time. I think I would have been under 2K. But two, right up until February, if you remember, the first 8 months of my running, first 9 months, I was running in trainers, not running shoes, trainers, which are more robust. And I guess that's why my feet were warmer. I'm running in these running shoes for the first time during a winter. I got them in February. They caught the back end of the winter when the ground was getting a bit harder. They were still, you know, very wet until June. I do remember having to actually wash the mud off a couple of times, and then I had to dry the trainers out. But because of the lightness of the shoe, I think that's why my feet are really, really cold right now when I'm running, and I think I probably have to double sock. It reminds me that prior to my foot surgery 2 years ago, two and a bit years ago, that just before being told that there was nothing more that they could do for the foot to free me of the pain, there were no more cortisone jabs that I could have, they suggested incorrectly. I was seeing so many people, and this was a guy at one particular hospital. He said, you need to buy ASICS or ASICS, whatever, trainers. And I went to their big flagship store in Regent Street, served by this young half Cameroonian, half Basque guy, affable, until the point where I tried to speak to him in Spanish, and he told me that he wouldn't speak Spanish, which was fair enough. But at that point, I lost him. He said he was a Basque and he wouldn't speak Spanish. But I got the ASICS. Now I've gone with the ASICS urinal. And I wore the ASICS for about 2 or 3 days. And this was in the spring of 2018. So you see, I'm slurring my words here. I'm reminding myself of Minty Matt and his da-da-da-da-da, where he kept his teeth close and nailed down that super fast time. The ASICS, I thought, why are my feet so cold? And this is spring. I can't wear these in winter. So I'd actually worn them for 2 or 3 days, but I did get a refund on them. I mean, my feet had never been so cold. I think it's probably a similar story as to why my feet are cold in these running shoes, and it's probably the same for a lot of runners. I don't know whether they wear thicker socks in winter. I don't know. I wore my, I think my Belega running socks today, not the Slazengers, which are absolutely battered right now. Another dog incident. I'm not making these up. Rupert. I don't know why these dogs are coming for me. I mean, I had a few incidents last year, a few earlier this year. This is two back-to-back incidents now. Is it the armband? You know, the owner today was better. So it was Rolo on Friday. Today was Rupert. The owner was a young woman. She called him off right away. I have to say, I think my confidence from, well, my confidence as a result of Friday's dog assault has been shaken. Definitely. Because not with Rupert. But a lap or two later, I saw one of those trophy dogs off the leash, and I wanted to be sure that that wasn't going to make an attempt to jump on me, and that's not happened before. Normally, I'm just not concerned at all. I actually encountered Rupert on my last lap, and he again tried to go for me, but by then he was on his leash, which served him right for being a naughty boy. And again, he got shouted at by his owner. I don't know what I'm doing. Is it the running style? Why are they coming for me? Is it the armband? Am I right? Is it the armband? Again, it goes back to that thing I said earlier this year. Is there a memo being circulated in the local canine world? You know, there's this guy in this particular park. From the socks upwards, he is wearing very dated running gear. We do recommend you shake him up a bit. My reactions, of course, they're not what they should be. They're not what they need to be. It's a minor point. The run was good. The ground is slippery. Bit of mud indoors. There's going to be a little problem that I'll probably need to address tomorrow morning in that I've brought some mud with me into the flat. When I took the trainers off, I can see that there are little bits of mud by the doorway to the bedroom. If I'm not careful, I'm going to take them into the bedroom and into the bed because I do sleep with socks on and have been since August because obviously I'm someone that feels the cold. That's something for me to be mindful of. Saturday was a really dull day. I managed to get in a couple of Star Wars football games, though, just because I knew that the disruption, the length, the 11 days without a game, the longest spell of Star Wars football 3 days since August or since July 2019, for me, it threatens to undermine what could well be or what should be the best Star Wars Silver Age season since the game returned. I'll cover those games on Thursday's Patreon bonus. Let's see if I can just get towards the end of this show. Feel myself being very slow tonight. I had a game on in the background. It was either it would have been BT Sport because I've only got Sky Main Event, which is a rubbish channel, but BT Sport gives you the option to turn off the crowd noise. I've not often done that because I can never remember the channel that gives me that option. But I turned over to that channel, turned off the crowd noise. Might have been West Ham v City or City v West Ham. Some team was wearing a black away kit, which no one should be doing because no one will ever better the 1993-95 Manchester United Umbro, I think the sponsor was ViewCam kit. No one will ever better that. That was a brilliant, brilliant black strip. And now every club tries to have a black strip. It's just lazy, lazy on the designer's part. So I turned off the crowd noise, listening to the players. It was like watching park football, but without the dog muck. It was identical audio. It was really, really striking. Football needs the fans. I'm not saying that they ought to have been back by now in the stadiums, because I don't think the problem would be so much in the stadiums. I think the problem would be how do you get them to the stadiums safely and how do you get them out of the stadium safely? You know, how's public transport going to cope? So, and I'm not saying that you should bring back, say, you know, 50,000 fans. I'm saying that I think there is an argument maybe for bringing back, you know, 1,000 fans into a stadium that might normally take 60,000 fans. But the problem is getting them there safely and getting them away safely. So right now, I think we're in the situation, the only situation that we can be when it comes to football. But it's just, it doesn't work without the fans. You're seeing strange results. You're seeing big clubs struggling. I think when you're a big club, when you're a big player, your ego demands the fans. And if you don't have the fans, you're your standards are going to drop. You know, it's not like the little, say, for example, just plucking an example out of thin air here, a lowly independent podcaster with very few listeners. You know, you can't say that they need the fans, that they need the listeners, because they keep going regardless. You know, they're effectively podcasting behind closed doors. They may as well be. The 24th, that was Saturday, another mess up in the upside down notebook. I'd written upside down in the upside down notebook. Last week I'd missed a page, but this weekend I'd written upside down, which technically, of course, means it's the correct way up. I was writing the correct way up, just because this notebook is the upside down notebook, that writing, which in any other notebook over the last 30 years would have been the correct way up, is actually upside down. I've never been so erratic with a notebook. It has shaken my confidence in my notebook history after 30 years. Sunday, I responded to a somewhat arsy email I received in the morning, two paragraphs from a guy who actually had, whose both names began with the same letter, like those characters of Marvel comics that I couldn't find examples of. His email had it was two paragraphs, seven exclamation marks, and it told me already what I was dealing with, and I couched my response politely, but it was a silly email from a publisher, and I just thought, you know, they needed to hear back from me, and I've not heard back from them in return. And after that, I went back into the bathroom to finish, well, have another haircut. I had one on Saturday. And on Sunday, I addressed a few bits that I'd missed on Saturday because the light here is so poor. And that was the weekend. I've got this address book I bought on eBay a few weeks ago. That's very useful. I needed it to, you know, build up all the contacts I'm making for this new football show. But it's disappointing because there's barely space for an email address on one line. You know, it gives you one line for your email addresses. And I almost think it's a design that they might have come up with in the early noughties when they thought, well, we need to do something with our address books to embrace this new technology, you know, the internet. We need to do something. And they've not revisited that since. And I just can't fit. I can't fit the average email in a single line in that address book. Some quick housekeeping. Can't see where I'm going to have time to bring in a sting. Well, actually, no. I'll bring one in here. That's what I'm going to do.
You're listening to Daniel Roy Tyson is available.
You got your sting there, or rather, I got it. So, housekeeping. Monday's regular episode will continue to go out as normal. Thursdays will be for Patreon supporters only. Any bite-sized shows, patrons only, to any bonus content, though, that strays well beyond the bite-sized episode length will be an early release for patrons, and then regulars will get it a couple of days later. I'm just trying to find a model that works. I'm trying to find a model that is fair to you guys and fair to me. The show's here to stay. I'm going to reach the 300 mark before Christmas. I'm pretty sure about that. And it celebrates, well, I wouldn't call it a celebration. Really, it marks 8 years. Let's go with the marking. 8 years next week since its launch, and a third of those shows have come in just the last year, which to me, it tells me, one, the difficulty and slowness of reaching 300 episodes is down to just how labor-intensive post-production of a podcast has always been. Two, the fact I've done over 100 shows in 12 months, if you factor in all the bonus shows, if it doesn't tell you, it certainly tells me that that is simply down to my situation, because this is a mire. I think that's what it is. It's the situation I find myself in. And as is often the case for creators, when you're in difficulty in your life, you fall back on the creativity. Not because you believe it's going to get you out, but just because you need an outlet for how you're feeling. The show is here to stay. I hope, despite the appalling Patreon support, I'm mindful that it's a bad time for people. I get that. At the same time, this is a load of work. If I had a life, there'd be far less of the podcasting, because it's not what I want my life to be. It's not what I ever wanted my life to be. I'm a writer. I'm not a podcaster. That's how I see myself. While the show's here, there are other parts of my life that are slipping away and starting to slip away quite quickly now. It's a precarious situation, and I need to keep an eye on what I'm getting close to losing. So I need to find a way to make this work. I'm not apologizing to anyone for trying to be able to at least pay some bills through this work. It was been a long day, you know, 14, 15 hour day now. Did good work on the two scripts I needed to get out. One has gone and met the deadline. The other one, I mean, the quality of the script is really good. That's what makes me very frustrated, because I know why I've messed up. I know that, you know, there's every reason, even if I get the script in now, for these guys to doubt me, to think, well, why did it take him so long to finish it? I made the mistake of changing the way that I work normally with a script. I have had so many headaches, so many difficulties, not headaches actually, but I've had difficulties with the varifocals. I'm dealing with the opticians. I wanted to spend less time on the laptop, so I was working with the script. I was making loads of post-it notes. There were post-it notes I couldn't find. I'd be looking for 15, 20 minutes, and then I discovered that they were stuck on the elbows of my fleece. Last night was chaotic. I was looking for one post-it note, I kid you not, for nearly 2 hours. 2 hours that could have been put into the script, bringing it closer to completion. Completely forgetting that I didn't have a post-it note for that bit of dialogue that had to be inserted, because I'd already inserted it directly into the script in the morning. And this script, it's slipping away. It bothers me. It bothers me because I think it's unfair that I found myself in this situation where my body is not able to get things that normally come a bit easier to me over the line. Last night I spoke to my aunt during a break from that script. By then I thought, yeah, it's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen today as in yesterday. It hasn't happened today, of course. I've just told you that. And I was on the phone to my aunt. My uncle was again talking about getting an electric shaver. And I knew my aunt had picked up an Argos catalogue just a couple of weeks ago. So I said, look, when I'm feeling better, we can have a look in the Argos catalogue and we can see what we can get him. Oh, I've chucked it, she said. She always chucks stuff, letters, catalogues. Soon as something has been there for a day, soon as someone has read it for her, whether it's a letter, nectar points, whatever, and given her the information, out it goes. So I'll now need to get another catalogue for her. Won't be for a few days. Do feel very run down. A cold at worst, I think. As I said to my cousin's wife in a message, we are now there in that flu season. You feel the onset of a cold. Is it a cold? Is it the flu? Or is it the virus? Who knows? I'm not going to panic. I think it might just be a cold. I haven't felt worse today. I do worry that I am putting an enormous stress on my body, not with the running, just with the late nights at this laptop. It's now 21:44 hours. What am I still doing here, sat at this desk? Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available, episode 282. Ways to support the show: iTunes reviews, just 30 seconds of your time. Rate, review, subscribe, increase the visibility of this show. You can follow this work on Twitter and Instagram at 1607 West Egg, facebook.com/DRT available. No joy without Facebook issue. Have a look under latest news, as I say every week in one of the recent posts. You've got details on there of the issues, screenshots, etc. I need that advice. I need to know what to do with this because, 7 months of not being able to post properly. Why am I still using this page? And also, it's something I need to fix because such a page for the new football show would be very useful, because I think it's going to be something that's going to be popular. A Facebook page for that kind of demographic who are very big Facebook users would be enormously helpful. But why am I going to create a new page if I can't get the one that I've got working? So any advice, please email me, drtavailable@westegg1607.co.uk, or message me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm just very keen to resolve it. And it's incredible that it is one techie problem that no one out there has been able to resolve. The best way, of course, to support this show, the most direct way, is via the Patreon page. Bonus content every week. You've got two tiers of support. You can pledge in your local currency. Patreon.com/DRT available. Sign up there for a different kind of podcast. And also, if you've got any dado dede dita, no, it's not dado dede dita, Tato, tata, tete, tito, tita. Tato, tete, no, tato, tata, tete, tito, tita. If you've got any of those, email them in as well to DRT available at westegg1607.co.uk. Record them on an MP3. Minty Matt, still top of the leaderboard, dead on 2 seconds with his very controversial style. The kid, 2.56 seconds, he is in second place. Moving on, this was something that was dominating my mind yesterday and something that I definitely thought would be at the heart of today's show. As it is, it appears to be coming in with a show close to being an hour long, which is far from ideal. I was just very down on Sunday, and it was simply because of a dream. Actually, there were two strange dreams on Sunday. The first, pretty straightforward. I was investigating the Whitechapel murders, as you do. I listen to something on the 1888 murders every week. Every week, I find something. My dad always found my interest in that side of things rather ghoulish, which I totally get. But the whole period just fascinates me. The fact that he was one of two serial killers operating at the time, the Thames Torso murderer being the other, though thought by some to be one and the same, not me. The Thames Torso murderer had returned around 1888. Earlier Thames Torso murders in the 1870s. That might have been the Raynham mystery, perhaps kicking that off. I can't remember, but the Raynham mystery is attributed to the Thames Torso murderer. The Whitehall mystery, that is the seriously unsettling one. New Scotland Yard was built on the site of what was going to be a new opera house. They either ran out of money, I can't remember what happened, but they raised the foundations. I think they knocked the whole thing down, so New Scotland Yard had to be built from scratch again. And during the building of New Scotland Yard, there was a torso dumped on that building site, and to this day remains a mystery and a rather creepy one. And slap bang in the middle of the Whitechapel murders. Sunday morning, though, I'd had the Whitechapel murders dream, very bit scary. For some reason, I was in the East End of London. But it was the Docklands, might have been the old Docklands job there that my brain had uncovered this long buried memory. It was all rather glitzy. It certainly wasn't the 1880s I was in, but I was looking for the Ripper. Sunday morning, though, I was killed by a dream that left me so down that by the late morning, most of it was coming back to me, and I just had to write it down, process it, analyze it, try to work out why it was happening to me. It was a struggle. It really was a struggle yesterday, and I'm not sure if it's what's in my system right now leaves my guard somewhat vulnerable, or whether this type of dream is just simply always going to be there in the background. It's always going to rock me. But it was yesterday was an exceptionally difficult day on the mental side of things, and I was listening to the iPod Classic till about 0300 hours. I think I'd had it on after I drifted off for maybe an hour, and then I woke up and I was listening to some Tears for Fears stuff from the wrong side of their peak, and I hadn't listened to it for a while. I wasn't feeling well. I think that's down to being caught in the rain on a few runs last week. In fact, every run last week, I wasn't taking a hat with me. And the dream that I had, getting back to my point, had affected me rather badly by the morning, and I just thought, why is my head doing this to me? It knows where I am in my life. I don't need this. And in the dream, the ex was selling up. Obviously, I'm in their property. They were selling up in this dream. We had to meet up to oversee the sale and to get the money. And I have no idea how sales work in property. I've never owned a house. I'm never going to own a house. And two, I don't know why I was there at that dream meeting because I'm only the renter anyway. And then when we met up, and this was in the dream, I was acutely aware that I would never see her again. And she was talking about splitting the money from the sale. And I just said to her, I didn't want or need half. I just wanted her to be okay. I wanted her to be happy. I wanted to know that she was okay and happy, which is a point I have to say I make every night in my prayers, genuinely. Though I should add that I was very disappointed that I said my prayers on Friday night sucking on a sugar-free polo. That for me is rather poor form on my part, but it just happened. We talked briefly in the dream, and she said, and this was rather strange, that she was moving to Watford. I have no connection to Watford whatsoever, and neither did she. And she was telling me in the dream that she could be happy in Watford, and she tried to persuade me to settle in some destination more specific where I could, you know, rebuild, you know, find my own Watford. And she said, "You'll be all right there." And then she went. And you see, when I was jotting this all down yesterday, I was finding it very, very moving. And that was yesterday, but it was bothering me all day yesterday. And when I've just started telling you this, I'm just, you know, I'm just going over it, and I'm going over my notes, and I'm thinking, it's done. This is yesterday. And now, you know, I'm moving deeper into this, and it's affecting me again. Maybe not to the extent it was yesterday. Maybe I should have done this yesterday, but it was difficult for me, this particular dream. By late morning yesterday, and I do think, again, it's the changeover, it's the chemical stuff I'm going through. I was beginning to play the dream over and over in my head, and my eyes were beginning to water. And it worried me because the June 2019 meltdown, that was what led to the GP doubling the pills. Now I'm on the changeover. The residual effect of the old pills is still there. It's something that should protect me for a bit longer. But this sadness, the fact that it really broke through, that to me is a concern. I could obviously spin it round slightly and say, well, maybe it's a good thing that I can still feel stuff like this. And I would say, well, no, because that's what led to last summer's meltdown. This is the way that life can be. You know, you lose people that you care about. It doesn't have to be a bereavement for it to feel like one. This has felt like one for me from the beginning because of where I am. I'm in their flat. There are all these memories associated with this place. There are ghosts everywhere. I have to look, you know, I only have to look outside the window and I can just see us, picture us walking across the road or whatever. It's a horrible situation. And to find myself on my own, not just on my own during this very strange time, but also on my own in a place that we tried to build a life together in, it's extremely tough mentally. And I think mentally I'm quite a robust guy because I've needed to be. I think I've dealt with things that people who you may think might be tougher mentally would struggle to deal with. You know, and that's been the case now for 20 years. I've had to carry the things that I've talked about on many shows, probably too many, you're thinking, and that would be a fair comment. But, you know, I talk about them because I've not been able to shake them off, basically. That's why I keep coming back to them and trying to work out some different way to get around them. But the thing is, although I regard myself as being extremely tough mentally, when I drop my guard, maybe mentally, or when Mr. Sandman decides to drop some difficult dream on my head, I have to start all over again. I have to just try and tell myself it's just a dream. I have to work hard, or I begin to work hard at it, perhaps ill-advisedly processing it just to get through that moment. That's the way I deal with it. And, you know, I jotted it all down and I just thought, well, I'll talk about it on episode 282. And here I am. And I was thinking maybe that'll help me. And I'm not sure now if it is. I think yesterday it certainly would have, but it might have been a more emotional sound in me that you would have heard because I was quite a mess at times yesterday. And I was writing it all down in a Banner gel ink pen, blue, which ran out towards the end of jotting down the dream, which I thought maybe symbolic. I swallowed hard and, you know, I just toughed the whole moment out. More water in the left eye for some reason, I don't know why. Right-handed, can use the left. Left-footed, maybe the extra tears, the extra water in the left eye, maybe that's connected to the left foot. Who knows? What is the point of these dreams? You know, what is my head trying to tell me? It can't be to heal you when you have these kind of dreams because they can and do hurt you. You're a kid, you fall, you cut your knee in the school playground. Try and remember that. It scabs up. That's the healing process underway. It's still sore, but it's scabbing up. It's healing. Your body is mending itself. If someone said to me that the dream I had yesterday, the dream I had on Sunday morning, a dream which I find incredibly difficult to recall. Not difficult to recall as in difficult to remember it, just I find it difficult to think about that dream because it's incredibly sad to me on a personal level. This can't be me at the scabbing stage. You know, this has been going on for a long time. I wouldn't buy it if someone said, oh, that dream is, you're at the scabbing stage now. You're mending, you're healing. You know, the scabbing stage should have been over and done with by now. Maybe this is just one long scabbing stage because I'm stuck in the same. For as long as I remain here, you know, I'll be on some form of medication because I can't go through this experience doing the chemical equivalent of barebacking. Can't do that. Even the gel ink pen ran out as I detailed that dream in my notebook. An omen, maybe. Did that pen come into my life just to jot that down? Maybe. Those dreams, they can take so much out of you. They can diminish you even more. For me, when I have those moments like I did yesterday, my eyes got so tired. I had to tell myself at so many points yesterday, don't think about it. It's just a dream. Don't think about it. Long-time listeners will know that I'm not a big weeper. If I was the weepy type, there wouldn't be much wrong with that. But I'm also not much of a face puller. But here's the thing. Here's how I know when I'm on the brink of tears, because I start pulling big facials, opening the mouth wide, and that's a very effective tactic for me to offset any tears. It helps to raise the defenses. And I can confirm there were a lot of facials throughout yesterday. How many moments like this, how many dreams like this am I going to have to suffer? You know, where's it all leading to, I ask myself. Why does my mind, my dream state, whatever it is, think that I have to have these? Why does it keep letting these dreams through? Outside of any real bereavement that I've had, well, the actual bereavements, I would say that this is probably the saddest time of my life. And every day I'm stuck within these walls full of their association, you know, and the high ceilings making it difficult to reach the cobwebs, you know, the high ceilings, the memories here. I know where I am. I know I'm in this flat. I'm in this flat that I don't want to be in. I don't need the dreams to keep ramming that home. You know, just give me some better dreams. Why can't I have those dreams like I had back in January 84, early January 84, three nights of sci-fi dreams, UFO landing in SW8 on, I think it was on the Patmore estate. That was the opening episode. That is a strong opening episode. You know, I remember seeing a South Bank show with the late Stephen Bochco when he talked about NYPD Blue. The first minute of the first series, you had to hook the viewers, and it had a stunning beginning. And that was, I like to think possibly NYPD Blue may have been influenced by the stunning opening to my January 84 first episode of those three UFO dreams. A mini series, really. You know, why can't I have more of those? The amount of stuff that I have to take on a daily basis, just a function. And I still have, you know, my dreams rocked by something like that. You know, that's disappointing to me. Life, I think, is about trying to find someone, certainly for me, someone that doesn't watch ITV. And you think, that's it, the search is over. But that's not enough. Sometimes things go wrong, you know. And I was thinking about these things. And every time I was thinking about these things, I had to pull another face. And I was pulling them hard. I was stretching facial muscles I don't normally use, just to fend that sadness off. And something fails, you're going to be sad. It's a failure. And for me, that dream maybe felt like a message, like a final goodbye. And that's what was troubling me. It's not to say that in real life, I think we've yet to have that final goodbye. No, I don't think we'll have that. But I don't need it in the dream. I don't need it in dream form. Maybe we had that final goodbye in dream form because in real life we didn't have one. Maybe. Just living with some very big ghosts here that every now and then just pull me back into that whatever it is, quicksand, what have you, that I'm just trying to escape. And the morning, early afternoon was particularly tough, 14:02 hours. I think I just had an oversized bowl of porridge that I knew I would have to run off today. And I was pulling more facials as the dream recollection assaulted me once again. I washed up post porridge. The first facial, I was doing that thing with my mouth. I was opening it really wide, like a boxer getting used to the gum shield, you know, just like that. And a second later, another open mouth moment led to the left part of my jaw clicking. It was such a loud click. And then I did two of these. I was just finding anything to do, any noise to make, just to push back on these recollections. It's just a dream. It's a simple thing, isn't it? Tell yourself it's just a dream. Shut it down. Shut the thought down. But I couldn't do it. That's what really bothered me about it. It's just it was a difficult day. Let's wrap this show up. Let me just give you my nectar points. A couple of receipts. Trying to remember why I've got a couple of receipts here. So look at these dates. I remember something went wrong involving a coupon. There's a date there. That one is the 23rd of October. This doesn't make for a good podcast when you've got the long silences. Although I finally worked out how to, there's the throat going, how to truncate silences on Audacity. What's the date here? I think this might be the 23rd. Yeah, both 23rd of October. That one's from 10:37. Okay, so there were two trips to two different Sainsbury's. That's it. Yes, yes, I remember now. I went to the Nine Elms one last week as well to pick up some decaf, and that's where I try to use the coupon. Got my first Nectar Points coupon, or the first one that was useful to use since the original lockdown. Let me give you the first points. I'd gone in on 268 points, bought a skimmed milk six-pinter, got a good expiry date on that. Might be early November, trying to think now. The thin and crispy spicy chicken pizza, good calzone conversion on Saturday night, got the yogurt. Another packet of Sainsbury's own crackers, some sensitive shower gel, some washing up liquid, four single oranges, 30p. Sugar-free polos, which are primarily, their primary function is to stop me drinking more coffee. So not to actually suck on while saying my nightly prayers. 8 points earned, 268 points, ended up with a new points balance of 276. And a couple of hours later in Nine Elms, Sainsbury's, prior to going to see my aunt and uncle, bought myself the aforementioned decaf, loose baking potato, 49p. Was that just one? I think that was two loose baking potatoes. Yeah, I wouldn't spend 49p on one. That's flamboyant. Flamboyant's not the right word there, but it's 22:10 hours, missing the start of a show I listened to as well on the radio. Let's just try and finish on a good note here. This is what happened. I had a Nectar Points coupon that I was going to use that would treble my points. And the third item in this transaction was three Dishmatic refills. Oh, got to hurry this up. The voice is going. Got to the till, the self-checkout. The Dishmatics, the three refills fell to the floor. I thought, well, I'm not taking them home. You know, these are the clean dishes and glasses. Not going to be using them if they've been on the floor. So I just paid, first of all, for the coffee, for the decaf, and the two loose baking potatoes, and just thought, well, I'll wait till next week to use the three the Treble Your Nectar Points coupon. I did go back for the Dishmatic refills, and I paid for them separately, and I can't find that receipt now because the guy cancelled the item. So it's somewhere. So there's obviously a third receipt. So actually, the Nectar Points I'm going to give you might be a point or two out because I'm not including the Dishmatic ones. So the previous points balance was 276. Whatever. You know, let's just keep those noises in. It's going to be a genuine show. Okay, this is it. I'm tired. 3 points earned, leaving me with a new points balance of 279 points. Points worth 139. I'll tell you something. This show will hit the 300 mark before Christmas, but I think if I manage to hit the 500 Nectar Points mark before Christmas, I'll have done well, because this is proving quite a slow one. And that is the end of this week's regular show. Patreon listeners, you get your weekly bonus edition episode, whatever it's going to be. That will be with you on Thursday. No telling right now how many episodes a week are coming out. That's just the way I'm feeling right now. You know, hopefully there won't be many more dreams that I have to report back to you on slurring. If you want to join those patrons, sign up at patreon.com/DRT available. Thank you all for listening. If you're not joining us later in the week, I'm back next Monday with episode whatever it's going to be. I think I've already said that. What I haven't said is get those shoulders back. Keep on walking towards the sun. Keep washing those hands. Daniel Ruiz Tyson, and this start of the week, I have been very much available.